Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, June 1st. And we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show. The voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast. Finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer? Under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends. We are here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all of our collective crackness. Now call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right, you heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. So welcome, my friends, to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because we're here to stay and the couch is comfy. You see, here in Stupid Cancer Land, we're not just about the quantity of your life, we're about the quality too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means, is clearly coming from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook and Second Life and kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, people, and it's our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules, because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Last week's show, Christine Heinen from Hip Hats with Hair and Kathy Buetti, champion blogger, author of Breastless in the City. Our friend Chris Yambar was sick. He will be back in a July broadcast. Tonight's show is all about stupid thyroid cancer in young adults. With our survivor spotlight with Lily Mulcahy from the Light of Life Foundation, thyroid cancer advocate and survivor Alicia Fox DeLacio. Young adult survivor, thyroid cancer, and a regional chair for I2Y Texas, Amy White. Executive director of the THICAF, Thyroid Cancer Survivors Association, Gary Bloom. And joining us also some live studio guests tonight. We'll get to them in a second. So, hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show. And a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan. I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year young adult pediatric cancer survivor. Joining me live in the studio, as always, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Bouffard. Hello, Jack.
What's going on, Memzy?
Yo, yo, Jack will be I can't believe I just did that. Jack will be monitoring our live concurrent interactive chat room. So if you have something to say, well, I might ignore you, he won't, but feel free to ignore him, as the women do. And that's not even funny anymore because it's true.
It's beyond true.
And as always, it is my esteemed pleasure to welcome my official partner in crime here on the Stupid Cancer Show, hailing from the Windy City of Chicago, fellow young adult survivor, author of the acclaimed, amazing book, Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, the lovely, talented, blocktastic, and spectacular Carol Rosenthal.
Hello, Matthew.
I can't tell you how much I wait for that. That's every week.
He listens to the replays over and over.
I listen to the replays just for that little piece there.
Excellent.
And a special co-host tonight for us, joining us live, a Hodgkin's and thyroid cancer survivor, hailing from the amazingly odd city of Rochester, but we still like it anyway. Please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show one of the very first I2Y executive volunteers. She is the regional chair for upstate New York. She does some extraordinary stuff. I love her to death, and she's just fantastic. Leah Shearer, everybody.
Thank you, Matt.
Hi, Leah.
I can be nice when I want to be. Well, we have an amazing show tonight, guys, and we have a live studio audience here tonight. Joining us here in the studio is I2Y NYC Metro co-chair, the lovely, fantastic Annabelle Holland. She gets applause. Say hello, Annabelle.
Hey, y'all.
Hi, Annabelle.
Do you want to be introduced, Rachel?
Sure.
Okay. Say your name.
Hi, guys. It's Rachel.
Rachel is a new fan of I2Y. She is comes to us by way of a gentleman named Craig Alvarino, who is helping us out with our database from the amazing organization Active Cause. She's lovely. She is talented. She is a Native American who grew up in Australia and is now back in America, but she sounds Australian, but we forgive her.
Thank you.
Yeah. But
thanks, mate.
It's a pleasure. Yeah, you can still say, mate. You can get away with
thanks,
that.
Thanks, mate.
We'll let you get away with that.
Thanks for having me in the studio.
Oh, it's a pleasure. The accent makes up for everything else.
She's actually double dipping. She's ignoring me both in the chat room and in the studio.
Oh, okay. Fabulous.
That's not true. I've sent you two things already.
I like her already.
Okay.
Yeah, we knew you would, Leah.
And my wife's here, but she doesn't want to be recognized.
As usual.
She's waving
Hi,
on
Jen.
The radio. She's waving to everybody on the radio. So my wife gets a round of applause because she tolerates me.
Yes.
So everyone's been really, really busy. Carol, what have you been up to?
Well, you know, blogging, of course. So my new obsession is medical debt. Medical debt. Why does no one talk about young adult cancer and medical debt? It's my big question. So I've been researching the hell out of medical debt, how to avoid medical debt, what to do about credit cards and medical debt, what to do about your credit score and medical debt. So I just started the first post of my series today on my blog, and that's what I've been up to, is geeking out with some of the folks at the Cancer Legal Resource Center about medical debt.
Love them.
Mm-hmm. They're amazing. They're amazing. So, yeah, if anybody wants to check out my blog today, it's everythingchangesbook.com, and I have these really easy how-to steps on approaching your doctor and your hospital to get them to reduce your bill. Why not?
Is that like negotiating with the credit card companies?
No, it's even easier. It's like, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. I don't want to pay for it. It's
wow.
That kind of thing. I shouldn't say it's easy, but the thing that was startling to me is the statistics are that 50% of people who ask their doctors and hospitals for a reduction on their bill get it. And I think that if people use these tips and strategies, that they have an even better chance. So I think that's actually pretty high. I mean, it certainly is worth a shot.
Wow.
So you can say, I have a tumor in my brain, but I don't want to pay for it.
No, you say that after they take it out, and you're like, I don't like the way you took it out. Put it back in, and when they're about to, run away.
Yeah. I didn't pay for the scar.
Right, exactly. Wow. All right, so you've been talking to Paula out there. And
Joanna, I've been speaking
Joanna.
To Joanna. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had lunch with her 2 weeks ago, or breakfast with her 2 weeks ago when I was in L.A., and she was talking to me all about, like, how hyped up everything that they're doing is everything that they're doing is getting so much more exposure now, and I couldn't be happier for it. We need them in like every city in this country.
Well, they, in a way, they are in every city because they're national. And when anybody calls them, they hook you up with somebody in your city who knows how to handle legal issues. And I think a lot of people, when they hear legal issues, they're like, oh, well, I'm not suing anyone over my cancer, so I don't have a legal issue. But lo and behold, like almost every health insurance issue is a legal issue. Almost every employment issue is a legal issue. So we just need to start to think more legally and proactively in the legal realm about, you know, how to take the reins and kick some ass.
Well, all right. I mean, I think that that's kind of like when you discover that you can actually go on the line, on the line. You can go on that internet thing and like buy, find coupons for Amazon and then just buy the same thing and get a coupon off. And like people just don't know that they can do that when they're buying a toaster.
I didn't know that you could do that when you're buying a toaster.
Okay, yeah. Seriously, you can just, you can Google Amazon coupons. And there are all these websites that you have. They send you, you get a code, and it gives you like 25% off your purchase of X. But only the smart people that know how to do that, because you have to enter the code before you buy something.
Right.
Well, speaking of Amazon plugs, and I know this is like completely self-promotional, so I shouldn't do this, but I will anyway, because I was so shocked. I went on Amazon today, and I saw that you can buy my book and Chris Carr's book and Cancer Bitch, all three of them, for like $30. What a steal is that? I love Amazon.
It's like the trifecta.
It's almost like they thought, oh, my God, maybe cancer patients don't have a lot of money and we should give them more books for free. Yeah.
You said that really creepy.
I actually quite enjoyed it.
Jack, you just turned Jack on. It doesn't take much, but that did it.
Yeah, you had me at hello.
I've been possessed by this woman who, when I walked out of the door of my building today, literally, this woman walking down the street, she looked like she was about 25 years old, and she was wearing a nightgown on her head that was dragging on the ground behind a very long nightgown. It went from her hair to the sidewalk, and she was actually wearing very little on top. And she stopped in front of me, and she said, "You look exactly like the woman in that horror movie who slipped in the mud. If you own your building, does that mean the people who live inside, if they die, will come back to life?"
Was this Corpse Bride? Who was this woman?
I don't know, but I've had like a little bit of terror following me around today.
Wait, she wasn't confusing with the woman walking down the hall in The Shining, was she?
Right.
Who knows? I don't know. I don't watch terror movies, but, you know.
The one in the bathtub, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Knives. Yeah, so if that's leaping out of my voice, that might be why.
I think you're going to need to monitor the Amazon thing, because if people go there and see your book, and down there, if you like Carol's book, you might also like The Shining, you know, that people are going to...
Yeah, people who bought Carol's book also bought The Shining.
Right, exactly.
Do you want to hear something interesting? I've been getting a lot lately. People who bought Carol's book also bought 101 questions and answers about prostate cancer.
What?
Now, I know, but I think it's kind of interesting, because I believe it actually means that the rest of the cancer community thinks that us folks in our 20s and 30s have something to say that they can learn from. You know, it's all
because there is no prostate cancer. I mean, none, but like it's like the least common cancer in young men.
Exactly. It's extremely uncommon.
Right.
Extremely uncommon. Practically unheard of. Not that we want to make anybody out there feel like an outcast who's
right
under the age of 40 with prostate cancer, because I'm sure they're out there. But it's extremely unheard of. So, yeah, you know, this, like, older gentleman happened to be buying my book.
Wow.
Maybe it's just because I talk about sex in it a lot.
Oh, my. That's why I bought it.
Giggity indeed. I need
there,
to get that
there's
sound
the
clip.
Connection. The Via, it all comes back to Viagra.
I only have Peter Griffin. I don't have it. I have this.
Holy crap!
That. I need to be taking on there somewhere.
Speaking of sex, can we plug next week's show? Because I'm so excited. I bet just
plug.
Stop thinking.
Oh, <God. laughs>
oh good God.
Oh, you mean talk about next week's show?
Talk about it. Yeah, talk about it.
Might be.
Hey now.
Oh boy. All right, fine. We can talk about next week's show, but only until we have to plug it after I play this. Okay, go ahead.
No, you go now. I'm afraid to open my mouth again.
You go, Ned. I mean now.
Oh, no. This is so many levels of wrong.
Yes, it is. It is. Oh, Paul Rubens, how you scarred my childhood.
Don't worry, Leah. Not too many of your students are listening.
No, that's okay.
Take
Tommy
away
Waters,
that,
if you're listening, don't listen.
But some of them found my blog today. That's trouble.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, before we talk about the sex show next week, because we're going to bring on some of our guests in probably 5 or 10 minutes, I do want to plug the fact that I kicked Jack's ass at mini golf while we were in Orlando for the ASCO conference, and he apparently has to come up with a bunch of excuses how it's possible that I kicked his ass in mini golf. But I'm giving him the attention he needs.
I do have a list
of
excuses.
Yeah. I'm giving Jack the attention he needs right now.
And first of all, for the record, you did not kick my ass. Par for the course was 40. I shot a 44. You shot a 42. You beat me by 2 strokes.
You know what? I don't care.
But I can explain how this happened.
No, but I still get this.
Well, if you let me explain, then you might realize how you did beat me in golf.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Here we go. Stupid cancer. Top 10 reasons why I lost to Matthew Zachary in miniature golf. Number 10. I thought the higher score wins. Number 9, it was Matt's birthday weekend, and throwing the game was my gift to him. Number 8, I'm so excited, anticipating the fun to be had at the I2Y Ungala June 10th in New York City, that my excitement effed up my putting. Number 7, I had trouble putting into the wind. Number 6, the blazing Florida sun was in my eyes.
Jack, we played at 10 o'clock at night.
The sun was in my eyes, Matthew.
Okay, fine.
Number 5, I felt the need to rush through the game and get Matt's pink golf ball off the course before someone else saw it.
Okay.
Number 4 reason why I lost to Matthew Zachary in miniature golf. It's hard to aim straight when Matthew keeps putting from the rough. Number 3, I'm so distraught about not seeing my Leah Shearer at this weekend's OMG conference in Syracuse that it's interfering with everything I do. Number 2, reason why I lost to Matthew Zachary at Pirate Cove Mini Golf is I heard Matthew had a brain tumor and let him win because I felt sorry for him.
Oh, God.
And the number 1 reason why I, Jack Bouffard, lost to Matthew Zachary in miniature golf, I saw some pirate's booty and got so excited my putts went all over the place.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't mean the popcorn.
Oh my God.
So now everybody knows why I lost by 2 strokes.
Literally and figuratively.
Oh, my God. OMG.
Oh, my God. All right, Carol. Sorry. Let's talk about next week's show because we're clearly on track for sex right now.
Absolutely. I'm still not opening my mouth. Somebody else.
All right. Well, next week's show, I'll lead off. Fine. I'll take the first plunge. Sex is really like the elephant in the room when it comes to cancer at any age, but especially when you're younger, it's something that's usually on everyone's mind all the time anyway, especially for a guy.
Giggity.
And I can't say anything anymore, can I? And clearly, it's something that needs to be discussed much more frequently and much more openly. And since this show, we just crossed 14,500 listeners. I just checked the metrics today. So we have 14,500 listeners out there who all want to, I'm assuming, want to be able to talk about sex, or if they have issues, they want to feel open about it. They want to be able to express themselves. So we decided to dedicate next week's show to nothing but the most explicit conversations about the realities of sex with cancer, living with cancer, being affected by cancer. And we've amassed an incredible talented lineup of sexperts. I can't believe I just said that either. And is that enough, Carol, for me to desensitize you to take the lead now?
Fantastic.
All right, go ahead.
You're clearly going for ratings here, right, Carol?
Yes, all ratings.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's going to be a fantastic show. It's going to be the down and dirty and the nitty-gritty. And it's all about sex. And like Matthew said, we have great experts that we're going to be having a panel conversation with. And I have asked people to send in questions to me to read on air. And I've actually been getting a very good response. So
I've got 4 pages of questions right here. Should I wait for next week?
So you can do it anonymously or not. Just go to my blog and shoot me an email, whatever you have wanted to know about sex. I mean, if you want to do it anonymously, just leave it as a comment on my blog. You can leave it anonymously so that we can ask them some, you know, real questions from real people. Yeah.
Well,
as extra enticement, I just had a fantastic exchange today with the author of The Guide to Getting It On. I don't know if anybody's ever read this tome, but it's like the sex Bible. And we're going to be giving away three copies of it on air next week during the sex show. So listen, listen, listen.
Fun.
Nice.
Wow.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think that needs a needs one of these guys.
Cinderella cut it up one time.
Jack is doing the fly dance. No, don't take your shirt off, dude.
Oh, sorry.
All right, little homage in advance of next week's show.
Come on.
We should do this more often. Just play music and do nothing. All right, I'm going to cut it off. Literally. No giggity.
I was actually having some horrible John Wayne Bobbitt flashback.
Okay, fine.
I hope there's not gyrating going on over
there. Oh,
there
was.
I can't
and it's
handle
bad.
That.
Okay.
In Radio Land, you can use your imagination for whatever you want.
All right. Well, on speaking of using the radio show for whatever you want, let's allow Jack some time for more attention to read the news. So here we are, the Stupid Cancer News.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Okay, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs, services, events, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming program, event, press release, or other stuff that you would like to hear broadcast during this part of the show, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565. That's 646-861-2565. Or email Jack Before directly at jack@i2y.com. That's jack@i2y.com. Take it away, bro.
Thank you, Matthew, and a belated happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Attention, New York City. This Thursday, June 4th, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center is presenting their Young Adults New Challenges, New Beginnings Life After Cancer Workshop. This workshop is focused on living beyond cancer, and for more information and to register for this event, please call 212-717-3527. And this Saturday, Matthew, is our OMG Syracuse.
Yes, it is.
OMG Syracuse.
S-Y-R.
S-Y-R. Go Orange. Syracuse Orangemen.
Go Carrier Dome?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. All right, I'm glad that you can get at least one sports reference. Matthew, I don't have the information in front of me. What is the OMG Syracuse website, please?
It is syracuse.omgsummit.org.
Awesome, and thank you, Leah, for putting that in the chat room.
You bet.
You're the bomb, baby. Appearing in Washington, D.C. for one night only, Jonna's Body, Please Hold, a cancerous dark comedy starring the amazing Jonna Tomasis. Jonna is a three-time cancer survivor who turned her experience into a funny, uplifting performance you must see. This event is being held in D.C. on Thursday, June 18th from 6 to 9 at Busboys and Poets. This event is free to all survivors, and to RSVP, please contact Kelly Alfaro at kelly.alfaro. That's kelly.alfaro at lls.org. Or you can reach Kelly by phone at area code 703-399-2936. Like Carol mentioned before, everything changes. The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s is the newly released book written by our very own Stupid Cancer co-host, Carol Rosenthal. Everything Changes dusts the sugarcoating off of the young adult cancer experience. It is packed with gripping stories and an unprecedented collection of young adult cancer resources. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold, like Amazon.com. Visit the website for the book, everythingchangesbook.com. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Moving on to cancer care programs, the young adult groups that are active and running at cancer care are as follows. Living with cancer, inactive treatment. Life after cancer, post-treatment. Young adults loss of a parent, young women with breast cancer, young adult individual grief counseling, and young adult caregiver for all diagnoses and relationships. Contact our friend Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's J-L-A-R-S-O-N at cancercare.org. Or you can reach Julie by phone at 212-712-6173. Camp Make a Dream is offering their young adult conference June 18th through the 25th. Their teen camp for teenagers aged 15 to 18 on July 1st through July 8th. Their kids camp for kids aged 6 to 14 from July 12th through the 19th. Their siblings camp for siblings aged 16 to 17, July 23rd through the 30th. And in August, they have their heads-up conference for survivors aged 18 to 25. For information on all of Camp Make Your Dreams programs, please refer to www.campdream.org. Next up, we have First Ascent. The First Ascent summer schedule for 2009 is June 26th through July 2nd in White Lake, Wisconsin, July 5th through the 11th, and July 12th through the 18th, and July 19th through the 25th at Glacier National Park in Montana. July 17th to the 23rd is in White Salmon, Washington, and I will be attending that one. So if anybody wants to hang out with me in the Pacific Northwest, come to First Ascent, July 17th to the 23rd. July 24th through the 30th and the 31st through the 6th is Vail, Colorado. And the August 14th through the 20th is Garden City, Idaho, and August 30th through September 4th is Jackson, Wyoming. And Annabelle Holland, who's in the studio with us, will be there. So, Annabelle, have a blast.
Sweet.
First Ascent. I might have to take two trips. Cancer Hope Network. Here's another resource you may be interested in. The Cancer Hope Network provides free and confidential one-on-one support for cancer patients and their families by matching cancer patients and or family members with trained volunteers who have themselves undergone and recovered from a similar cancer experience. Well, Cancer Hope Network is looking for new support volunteers who have had any one of the following cancers: lung, liver, pancreatic, stomach, appendix, sarcoma, anal, vulvar, bladder, kidney, primary parietal, and only Merkel cell or T-cell lymphoma. If you are interested in being trained, email info@cancerhopenetwork.com. CancerDirectory.com is a brand new resource to help you deal with your cancer crapness. It's called CancerDirectory.com. Not the sassiest domain name, but I'm telling you, it's one you need to remember. Whether you are already a blogger or have been considering becoming one, this could be your chance to share your rage against the machine with scores of others out there dealing with the same BS you are. So log on to CancerDirectory.com and post or repost your blog today, tomorrow, or whenever your chemo-induced hysteria settles down. And finally, we have...
the most important news of all time.
Yes, other than Matthew beating me in miniature golf.
Yes.
Stupid Cancer Ungala, New York City, 2009. June 10th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Taj Lounge, 48 West 21st Street. Where else, Matthew, can someone in New York City get open bar for $65?
Your pants?
In a open bar?
I had to go there.
Anyway, wow, Matt, you rendered me speechless. Kudos.
That's an accomplishment.
Stupid. It is.
That's what I have to do to shut him up.
Yeah. I was just excited my pants were getting attention. Stupid Cancer on Gala 2009 will be featuring hors d'oeuvres, cancer teeny drink specials, insane raffle items, and awesome door prizes. And when I say insane raffle items, Matthew, I'm talking about Yankees tickets, Mets tickets, purses, Steve Colbert tickets, restaurant gift certificates up the wazoo for many of the trendy Manhattan restaurants. What else? iTunes gift cards. I mean, the raffle prizes list is
crazy.
It's getting crazy. And for more information on the Ungala, please refer to ungala.i2y.com. And that, my friends, is the Stupid Cancer News.
All righty, that's the news. All right, we're going to bring in our first and second guest at the same time to do a round table. So allow me to introduce them in a row, and then we'll welcome them to the show. Let me just clear some things up here. Okay, our first and second guests is a four-year metastatic papillary thyroid cancer survivor and a recent grad of Wheaton College. She shares an auspicious birthday with me, May 29th. Just turned 22. Her work with some I2Y members has been recognized. She got all these awards for a thesis that earned her an honors degree in anthropology. Her interests besides long walks on the beach and a wine cooler at sunset with health policy and financing, the Chernobyl disaster, and anything Jack does. My second guest is Alicia Fox DeLacio, and if I'm butchering that, I apologize. Was diagnosed with thyroid cancer at the age of 21, and since has become very involved in building awareness for this disease. She is very active with the Light of Life Foundation, whose mission is to build awareness and help patients through education and fundraising. While working at a major aid agency, she got her company to take on the foundation as a pro bono accountant. With their help, has created a national advertising awareness campaign with TV, print, radio ads. We have a clip to play for you on tonight's show. And she appears as a patient herself in the latest campaign that is currently running in various women's magazines, including InStyle, Harper's, and others. Please welcome to the show, in order, Lily Mulcahy and Alicia Fox DeLacio.
Applause.
Yay.
Hi, Lily.
Hi, Jack.
How are you, babe?
I'm
happy belated
okay.
birthday.
You too.
And hello, Alicia. Am I pronouncing that right? Is Alicia?
It's Alicia.
All right, I don't know. I'm like, Alicia Silverstone? No, you're not that person.
Okay. It's close enough. It's Alicia.
Okay, we'll do Alicia. Because it's the C. I'm Jewish. We don't like render C's and S's very well.
I know. I don't know what's up with the spelling, but it's a variation, I guess.
Well, it's really great to have you here. This show's got a lot of traction. I don't know why it took us so long to do a thyroid cancer show, but clearly it's like one of the most under-recognized cancers that are out there in the young adult space, and it's the number two cancer in young adults. We have a huge number of folks in the chat room tonight, and we have Gary coming out. Carol and I have been chatting away with Leah. I'm going to turn it over to Carol because I know she has a lot of questions. She's read all your bios, your talking points, and I'm going to chime in as needed, but I'm very excited to hear what you guys talk about tonight. So take it away.
Hi, you guys. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Hi, Carol.
Hey. So, you know, later on, Gary's going to come on, and I'm going to grill him all about incidence rates and why our cancer rates are spiking so high, causes, yada, yada, yada. But what I really want to talk to you guys about is the experience of living with cancer, because there are so many of us, and I think it's great to chat about. I do want to duke it out with Matthew over thyroid cancer being the number two cancer in young adults, because I thought it was the number four cancer. So we're going to have like a little, you know, boxing match around that one. But
I you can beat up Archie Blyer as best as you can.
We do need to beat him up, because that's where I was getting my numbers from too. So maybe, you know, maybe the numbers got mixed up in translation. But yeah, it would be really interesting to get to the bottom of that. So I'll be back next week with a final answer.
Okay.
But before that, there was that terrifying voice coming out again. So I've got a little list of questions to ask you guys. And Leah, chime in too. I want to talk a little bit about, first of all, radioactive iodine treatment, which for those of you who are listening who don't know what radioactive iodine treatment is, it's really the foremost treatment that's used for thyroid cancer patients. There's only one kind of chemotherapy that's ever been approved by the FDA for thyroid cancer treatment, so most of us get radioactive iodine, which is either a pill or a little swig of radiation that we suck down and have to be completely isolated for a couple of days because we're literally glowing and can contaminate other people. So radioactive iodine treatment is kind of a hallmark of this experience. And what I wanted to ask each of you is, first of all, if you've had radioactive iodine treatment, sometimes people are isolated in the hospital, sometimes you're isolated at home. And for me personally, because I'm a thyroid cancer patient, this was a tremendously formative experience for me, both good and bad. And I'm curious if you guys can speak a little bit about what went through your mind when you're sort of locked up for days in isolation.
Sure. Well, I guess I could take a stab at that. This is Alicia. I, like Matt was saying, I was diagnosed when I was 21. So when you were saying, you know, you really want to get into the emotions and the feelings of it, it's honestly, I think I was so young. I'm 31 now, so it's about 10 years now. And luckily, you know, I consider myself thyroid cancer free at the moment. I have had two recurrences in the past 10 years and, you know, subsequently had to be readmitted and, you know, readministered the radioactive iodine. But, you know, it's definitely scary. And for me personally, the second time was really the experience when, you know, I just had thought that, you know, like got thyroid cancer. I was one of the unfortunate bunch, and I was going to deal with it and, you know, go in the hospital and, you know, get my radiation, and then it would be over. But for me personally, it was the second time when I really got scared and really felt that, you know, this could be something incredibly serious that I did not have a handle on the first time. And you're absolutely right. The radioactive iodine does make you literally glow in the dark. And it's funny because when you're first diagnosed, the doctor is, and I guess this is just the way they deal with, you know, young patients or any patient, they only tell you what you need to know. So, you know, my first consultation and my first visit, you hear part of it. And then once you cross that part, then you hear the next part and the next part. And for me, it was just an incredibly frustrating experience because I heard, you know, thyroid cancer was very treatable and very easy to deal with until you're actually, you know, in a hospital room and you can't leave for 3 days because you'll impact other people. But that being said, I will say that, you know, I do consider myself lucky because I'm fine now, and I actually value the time that I did have alone in the hospital room because it gave me the chance to really think about this in a big way. And, you know, I knew I wanted to do something to try and make other people aware of it, because when I learned that it was the fastest increase in cancer today, like out of all the cancers, it's the fastest increasing from year to year. It just was insane to me that you didn't have like an Oprah Winfrey or, you know, or anyone really supporting it or talking about it. And it was at that time that I met Joan Shea, who's the president of the Light of Life Foundation, and got really involved with her because I was working at a big ad agency. And, you know, long story short, we wound up teaming together with Lowe, the agency, to create this multimedia integrated advertising campaign, which is, you know, now 10 years later, I'm healthy and I feel better about it, but it is very rewarding to see the physical print, you know, advertising pages in magazines like In Style and Redbook and Marie Claire. And, you know, and what's even more fulfilling is that we get hundreds of emails from patients, you know, patients like us that say, you know, hey, I saw the ad in In Style. I can't believe someone's actually talking about this. Or, hey, I saw the ad in Sports Illustrated. You know, glad to see there's some attention. So
it sounds like this time alone was really terrifying, but it was also really motivating. And I'm kind of curious, Lily, if you had radioactive iodine treatment too, and what that time was like for you, if so, when you were in radiation and isolation and, yeah, what that was about.
Well, you know, for me, I was 18, and I had just gotten to college when I was diagnosed. And so I would say the first thing about radioactive iodine, and so in my mind as I'm thinking about three things. The first thing is that getting ready for it made me act so crazy while I was still trying to live at school in a dorm that I think that's really underappreciated, how hard it is to feel unbalanced and to be unable to act like yourself mm-hmm. when you're weaning yourself off of hormones. I think that the second thing was that I was, like I said, I was 18 years old, and it was so hard for me to see my family be so stressed and so worried. And when they walk you into that room and you take your little drink of Kool-Aid, that's it. They have to walk away. And the door weighs 1,000 pounds, and the whole thing is really intimidating. And it's scary to see your family have to walk away from you and leave you there with your thoughts about what's going on. I mean, that's just a scary thing. But, you know, when I think back, my mind goes to the next morning, and there was this man who was a radiation counselor, the person who comes in and says, don't go near this person, or don't hug your mother, that kind of thing. So he comes in, and he gives me all this advice, and he actually is like a stand-up comedian. He's the funniest person I've ever met. And I'm laughing and laughing, and we're in this hospital room, and we're all having, like, a great time talking about this. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to think that you could. But it's true, and I've found that every step of the way, spending time in hospitals, and that's the first time you're really stuck in that well, maybe not the first time, mm-hmm. but you're really stuck in the hospital. You can't go anywhere. And I have found every time that there is an amazing person who kind of brightens up my spot there. And I think that, I mean, without being melodramatic or, I don't know, cheesy, there really is an appreciation for that person who brightens up your day in the hospital. I mean, being locked in one place really makes you appreciate the people who are coming in. So
Speaking
anyway,
of people
I think
coming in, coming in to the conversation right now. Amy's on the line, and I'm just going to briefly have Matt introduce her and bring her in with us, too, so that we have a whole posse of us thyroid cancer gals chatting together.
Amy's my synthroid sister.
All right.
Well, everyone gets a fair introduction here, so I'm going to play this. This is going to enter Amy. All right. Amy gets this theme song. Amy was 27 when she was diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and May 31st, yesterday, was her three-year cancerversary. She just moved from Florida to Lubbock, Texas, to attend Texas Tech University, and the only reason she got accepted is because I gave her a letter of recommendation. So to start work on a PhD in healthcare policy, she's a member of the Young Adult Leadership Council, again, one of the early I2I adopters, and she loves Jack Buford, but I wasn't supposed to say that. So please welcome Amy.
She's the one.
White.
Hello.
To the Stupid Cancer Show. All right.
Hey,
everyone,
Amy.
Everyone gets their own great introduction.
Hey.
So, yeah, I mean, talk about synthroid sisters. I was 27 when I was diagnosed as well. And I'm gonna direct this next question to you, but also give everybody else a chance to answer. And when I was diagnosed, I mean, it doesn't matter what age you're diagnosed, I think that most people who are diagnosed with thyroid cancer here, you're so lucky to have thyroid cancer. You're so lucky. It's such a good cancer. You're so lucky to have it. So, you know, the reason where that comes from is that the five-year survival rates for 15 to 29-year-olds with thyroid cancer exceeds 99%. So we do have an incredibly high survival rate, which is why people often tell us that we're so damn lucky to have cancer. So, Amy, I'm curious if anybody ever said that to you, what that experience was like. How do you respond? What do you think about that?
I had pretty much every single doctor I ever went to tell me that I was so lucky to have thyroid cancer and that if I was going to get cancer, this was the kind that you wanted to get. And I understand where they're coming from when they say that, but at the same time, I didn't even have a concept of what a thyroid actually did. So when a doctor says to you, you know, you have thyroid cancer, you don't really understand what that means and what the repercussions are for your body and for everything else that you're about to go through. And they made it sound so easy, like, oh, you just take this pill and you're fine. But it's really not. It's really not that way at all. And it became very frustrating the more I learned about thyroid cancer and the more I realized that this was not just take a pill and be fine. This was some serious issues that I was going through. There were some serious health complications that I had, and it wasn't so easy. And like I said, I understand why doctors say it, but it's also very frustrating.
Have other people had that said to them, too, by doctors or just by, like, friends or family members?
This is Leah, and I've definitely experienced that. And I think it's a total disservice to those who are going through it to kind of just perseverate on that mantra because
wait, Leah just said
no
perseverate. Hang on. I got to stop you there. Leah just used a five-syllable word. All right. Sorry, guys.
I thought Rochester was the biggest word. That Leah used.
All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, that's all right. There's just no such thing as a good cancer. There's nothing easy about thyroid cancer, and every situation is different. And, you know, I think we take for granted. I didn't, Amy, I'm with you. I didn't really fully understand all the things that were involved, what my thyroid did or appreciate just the seriousness of it, you know, your metabolism, your inner thermostat, and when it's not working properly or you have to rely on other means to get it to work properly, it throws your whole life out of balance, your mood, everything. And in my case, I had a particularly, mine was diagnosed fairly late in the game, and so I had what was called a radical neck dissection. So there were other implications that were not even addressed with me beforehand. So I came into it thinking, oh, it'll be so easy. I had to go through rehabilitation, like physical therapy, to learn how to turn my neck again because I had muscle removed from it. You know, nobody's situation is the same, and I think when you stamp a label of good cancer on something, it's beyond being an oxymoron. It's just, it's unfair.
Well, not only that, but I really wish someone had sat down with me and talked to me about how difficult it would be to find a dose of Synthroid or whatever medication you're taking after you complete your therapy. Because, you know, I'm really lucky. I have a great doctor who was willing to work with me to get me on a dose that we could both live with. But it was a really long process. And getting to the point where we were both happy was really difficult. And I don't think anybody really talks to you and says, okay, if your medication is too high, this is what's going to happen. If it's too low, this is what's going to happen. And it's going to be a hard balance to walk and to find to get the correct dose for you. And it may take a year or more, like it did in my case. And
you know,
and just kind of blush over that.
An experience that I've had with that is, you know, people who have thyroid problems but not thyroid cancer, they want to find a balance so that they're not hyper, they're not hypo. But for those of us who have thyroid cancer, we need to remain a little elevated and a little hyperthyroid because it curbs the stimulation of our cancer growth. Of, you know, thyroid-stimulating hormones, and so we need to be a little bit elevated. I wonder if anybody else has had this experience where I personally, maybe it's because I'm a little bit of a black and white thinker, I'm an impassioned person, sometimes I like to take things to the max, but I was like, oh, you need me to be hyperthyroid so that this cancer doesn't grow and come back again? Bring it on. And it kind of scares me now that my doctor said, you know, if you want to, you can back off of it a little bit. You know, I was diagnosed 9 years ago, and I've actually never been cancer-free. And so all of my other doctors have said, we need to keep your thermostat as high as possible. We need to really crank you up. And now I found this really wonderful doctor who said, you know, studies show that we can just take you back a little bit, and I'm actually scared too. Does anybody else have that experience of being scared of the dosage that they're on and whether or not it's actually going to help curb the cancer growth?
Well, it's interesting you say that. This is Alicia, because I find, you know, as I've been going to different doctors for, you know, for other issues or whatnot, that they all seem to have their own opinion. And as much as I trust my doctor whose, you know, care I've been in for the last 10 years, it does get a bit scary to hear, you know, my primary care say that, well, 300 milligrams of Synthroid at your age, at your weight, you know, that could lead to early osteoporosis. So I now have to get bone density scans, you know, twice a year to make sure that my bones, God forbid, aren't, you know, becoming weak. So it's just, you know, again, going back to the good cancer, bad cancer, it's, there are side effects that I think, you know, I wasn't aware of at an early age that now are becoming a little bit more top of mind as I kind of, you know, realize that I've been on this drug now for 10 years and will be for the rest of my life.
When I've interviewed people for my book and on my blog, and I talked to a lot of cancer patients, many of whom happen to have thyroid cancer, and I've heard a lot of people say that they experience side effects from being on their medications their doctors don't necessarily acknowledge. And that was certainly my case, and I really didn't find much support or recognition about this until I started talking to other survivors. I'm curious what other people have experienced, what kinds of side effects that you've experienced from your Synthroid, and if you've ever had a problem getting doctors to take these side effects seriously.
I completely have, Carol. This is Lily. And I actually was thinking about that before when I was planning to come on the show. You know, I had my doctor say to me my last checkup, which was in May, that, you know, as you go along, you're looking for certain symptoms, say a pounding heart, kind of like hot kind of flashes, or nervousness or shaking, any of those things, chest pain, anything like that. Because incidentally for me, I have a lot of metastasis in my chest, which was found to be completely unavid when I had radioactive iodine. So I have those exact symptoms. And when I went to my doctor and I said, you know, this is what I've been feeling, and it's been coming on a little bit for a year or two, and he says, okay, and he makes a note of it, and I say, well, is that a problem? And he says, no. I say, well, are you sure? And he says, yeah. So, well, how do you know? Well, I have a million other patients exactly like you, and they're all fine. It's really difficult to understand what is a symptom of your medication, what's just a symptom of the stress of your life. And it is difficult to come up with the right dose, especially with the stress of not being cancer-free, which I relate to you with. And I guess it's just one of those aspects that comes in my mind when someone says to me that thyroid cancer is a good cancer. having thyroid cancer that goes away right away, maybe, but it's all so different, as we were just saying. And, I mean, when someone says that to me, I've heard it so much from doctors, I'm used to it, but when, say, a friend says that to me, I say, oh, is it okay? Is it good for me? Or maybe if someone I don't like says it to me, I say, would it be good for you?
One of the most brilliant responses I ever heard in regards to, you know, having a good cancer because you're comparing it to somebody who might have a worse cancer, which is very real. I mean, certainly I have met so many patients, and I look at the predicament that they're in and their prognosis, and I am extremely grateful that I have thyroid cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But Julie Larson, who will be on our show next week, she's a fantastic social worker at Cancer Care who works with young adult patients. And when I interviewed her, she said this wonderful gem of advice where she said, you know, what's important is to not compare yourself and your case to another cancer patient, but to compare your life now to what your life looked like before you were diagnosed. If you're going to make a comparison, that's the comparison to make. And I thought that was really, really true.
Exactly.
So, speaking of Julie Larson and our show next week, because she's going to be on our show talking about sex, and I'm going to spring this on you guys. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but I'd love to if you would. I'm kind of curious about if your thyroid hormones have affected your libido at all, and if you've had any impact with either dating or sexuality or intimacy as a result of your thyroid cancer.
I think I can answer that in terms of dating. You know, hi, Dad. But
hello, Mr. Mulcahy.
Hello, Mr. Mulcahy.
He's loving this in his living room right now. You know, I think that, like I said, I was diagnosed when I was 18, and so I continued dating right after my treatment, basically, or kind of during radioactive iodine after surgery. And I think that, firstly, hormonal fluctuations just with the thyroid hormone are difficult to deal with. You might act a little crazy, which I certainly did. And secondly, you can really have a difficulty with the bond you form so soon after diagnosis. And I think that there are so many young women who have thyroid cancer and who are in the middle of their dating lives, or they're in college, or they're in high school, or they're just out of college, and it's very difficult to manage that. It's very
mm-hmm.
difficult to say, maybe I shouldn't be dating because I feel like a wreck. Or, you know, maybe I let someone into my life and we're great friends and we're having a really nice relationship, but at the bottom line, they really have no idea what's going on because they're my age too, you know? So I think I definitely ran into that and had serious problems with, I don't know, breaking up with people soon after that. It's no good.
Yeah.
No, it's very difficult to...
Well, I was 21 when, you know, I was diagnosed and had, you know, the follow-up recurrences. And in my case, I guess you could say it actually worked to my benefit. My boyfriend at the time wound up becoming my husband. And I guess I guess people's true support system and nature tend to shine through in crises and, you know, when bad situations and good occur. So in my case, you know, it's hard to look back now, but I almost feel that maybe it brought us closer, quicker, and, you know, as a result, we wound up where we are today.
I think the bigger issue for me now is, when do you tell someone and how do you break the news to them? I mean, for me, it's pretty obvious because my scar is very prominent, and it's almost mm-hmm. always the first question out of someone's mouth, oh, gosh, what happened to your neck? So it's kind of, you know, breaking the news, oh, wow, I had thyroid cancer. But at what point, when you're trying to, you know, date someone, do you actually bring that up? Because it's not a conversation that everyone can handle.
Right.
And, you know, how do you tell the news and at what point? And that's something that I think you just kind of have to learn to feel out.
And I think so much of that depends on who you are as a person, you know, or I'm the kind of person where I'm just like, I got to say it right now. Because I just like to get things out there, though. There have been times when I've tried to hide it and, you know, they knew anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Sage Bolte, who's going to be on the show next week, has a great rule of thumb where she says the fourth date. By the fourth date, you kind of know whether or not you want to see this person again. So you you know, I kind of want to share that information because if it's a deal breaker for them, you don't want to get too attached. Sooner than that, you know, do you want to share it on the first date or the second date if this is vulnerable information and you don't really know this person? So, you know, I think it is something that is so personal and varies from person to person, but I loved that she kind of chose that as a guideline. It sort of seemed really sensible to me.
Yeah, that's true, Carol. And to piggyback that, you know, I've actually lost out on a lot of dates because my scar is in my groin area, and it's one of the first things that I show a potential mate.
Oh, God.
So I've learned to hold off on showing my scar right away.
To segue into prominent scars that are in locations usually seen by most people, I feel like this is Leah, but my scar is really very prominent, so I've just learned to tell people right off the bat so they don't just assume that I live in a rough neighborhood or something.
Rochester?
Hey, Rochester. But oddly enough, one of the first people I dated at the time, you know, the first person I dated after that was a physician's assistant. And when I told him, I felt like somehow he was taking his work home with him. But, you know, it's one of those things. I agree. It's very personal, and it's not something necessarily you'll do the same way each time.
Well, I mean, this is Matt. Just to chime in real quick, we were hanging out with Johnny Immerman this weekend in Orlando at the ASCO conference, and he's a testicular cancer survivor. He has his one testicle left, and he makes light of it, but we talked very candidly about how that's an odd thing to talk to people about. This notion of sex, you know, crosses all of the entire cancer spectrum for our age group. You know, obviously, seeing this giant slash across your neck, you can't really wear a scarf your whole life. You can't do that. But when it's in a really sensitive place, and I guess we'll touch on this too next week, literally and figuratively. That
I'll touch anything.
Oh God, Jack! I need. Just, I open the door, he walks right through. And let me, if I could just chime in with a question: is it harder for women than men?
What's the it?
The reveal, if you would.
You're asking a group of women. How do we know what to?
I would argue
that it is harder.
I feel like women are the nurturers. Yeah,
we
can ask Gary because he's a male thyroid cancer survivor.
Well, I also think that, you know, with the pressure society puts on women to look good and be thin and be perfect and, you know, all the stuff. Like, personally, I think a scar makes a perfect woman. But with all the pressures that society puts on, you know, with our advertising and everything, that it is harder for women.
Jack is going to get his first legitimate applause on the show, ladies and gentlemen, because he just made up for 34 years of misanthropy.
It's because the Mulcahy family's listening.
Okay.
Hi, Megan.
I want to talk about some other issues, though, that go into the challenges of dating someone with cancer, because even though there are these issues about body image and sexuality, look, you know, I've been spending my week researching medical debt. So many of us have medical debt. How attractive is that when we're dating? And that's something that men carry as well. And, you know, that's something that can be really challenging when you're talking about getting into a relationship. Hi, you know, I have $100,000 in medical debt. I think that there are other burdens that we carry that can make it challenging for us to enter a relationship. So I guess I just also want to advocate for the men here and the pain. I feel your pain. Yeah. So, you know, as we wrap up this conversation, because I'm excited to get to talk to Gary tonight too, I'm wondering if we can chat briefly. This is kind of a large topic, but if we can chat briefly about recurrence, because the recurrence rate for thyroid cancer is about 30%. And I know this is something that people think about no matter what kind of cancer they have. And it's one of the huge challenges that you have, you know, after you get a clean bill of health, which I've never had, but I assume that when you get one, you know, there's this elation that you have, but then there's also this fear of, is it going to come back, or when is it going to come back? And I'm wondering if you guys can each touch on the fear of recurrence.
Actually, can I chime in real quick?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask an ignorant question. I do not know the answer to this question, and just take it for what it's worth. If you have thyroid cancer and they remove your thyroid, how do you get thyroid cancer again?
That tumors can still – thyroid cancer tumors can grow back in the area, or they can grow back in your lungs or your bones. So you have metastatic nodes that can come back.
Okay, that's a good answer to a good question.
And I think that plays into when, you know, people talk about how aggressive of a treatment are you going to get, because, you know, most likely it will be removing it, a thyroidectomy, you know, full surgery, but oftentimes it's follow-up with the radiation and the treatment. And, you know, in my case, I actually wound up switching hospitals. I went from, you know, the hospital I was in where I grew up over to Sloan in the city because they were recommending a much more aggressive course of treatment for me. And, you know, that's where kind of the opinions and the doctor's opinions for us, or for me and my family, got overwhelming, because it's like, you know, the one school of thought is to give just only as much as you need, and then Sloan's school of thought was to be more aggressive so that it, you know, gets all of the potential tiny little cells that could be floating around. So, but yeah, that question, Matt, was one that, like, I asked myself a million times, like, but if I don't have it anymore, how are you telling me that I have thyroid cancer again?
I feel less stupid now, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, and I just want to advocate for people doing medical research on their own, because the answers to these questions vary so widely from doctor to doctor, mm-hmm. but they also vary so widely over time because more research is being done into what is the most effective. And when I was diagnosed almost 10 years ago, there are a lot of protocols that have changed in the past 10 years. And there are a lot of doctors who currently are still practicing under protocols that are 10 years old, because not every doctor is at a university teaching hospital. Only 10% of cancer patients are treated in university teaching situations. So there are a lot of doctors out there who are still operating under protocols and recommendations that are pretty old. So I recommend people to research the hell out of your disease, whether it's thyroid cancer or any other disease. Go on to PubMed, educate yourself, and hook up with an organization like THYCA to find out about, you know, what's happening with your disease and how to stay current on it. So with that, I want to segue into our next guest, who is Gary, and just thank you guys all so much for having this great conversation.
Thank you.
A round of applause for the ladies of thyroid
Heck
cancer.
Yeah. Let me stand up.
Jack is actually standing up. You're all welcome to stay on the call and to chime in, but I'm gonna introduce Gary now, and Gary's gonna get his own special theme here. Gary Bloom is the executive director of THYCA, the Thyroid Cancer Survivors Association, and a thyroid cancer survivor himself. And where is he? There he is. Okay. He founded THYCA and served as its founding board chair for more than 8 years before being named executive director. For the past 10 years, he has also facilitated the THYCA Washington, D.C. Thyroid Cancer Support Group. He is co-editor with two physician specialists of the reference book, Thyroid Cancer, A Guide for Patients. Please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, Gary Bloom.
Hello, everybody. That was an awesome conversation.
That was great.
I wish that I wasn't muted. I so badly wanted to chime in.
Well,
people were awesome.
We know better than to interrupt four women having a conversation.
It's like The View.
But this is the reality of thyroid cancer. It's very often that I'm in a room with a lot of women. And, you know, if only I weren't married. Happily.
Hey, now.
I can get you a lawyer if you need one.
No. Thank you.
So, Gary, tell us a little bit about your organization, how it got started. I mean, you guys were the online pioneers of thyroid cancer support and cancer support in general. Tell us about the beginnings and the history of your organization and where you guys are today.
Well, sure. I was not quite the founder. I was one of the founding people, but there were really wonderful people all over the United States, all over the internet, if you will, the World Wide Web, who each person stepped forward doing something individually, and slowly we managed to find each other through the internet, and we assembled all the pieces. There was a gentleman in the Boston area who had the first face-to-face support group. His name is Rick Blake. And he started the first face-to-face support group for thyroid cancer survivors. And a lady down in North Carolina named Karen Ferguson, who is one of the co-founders of the AOL chat room, they brought those visions together. They brought me into it with my energy and enthusiasm, and we found a couple of other people, like I said, around the country, all with different views, and we recognized that there was so little information. And one of the things that I've noticed, all the people, I'm the senior person here in terms of thyroid cancer diagnosis. I was diagnosed in 95, so I have a few years on everyone else here tonight. But as the ladies all said, it was so hard to find information. We recognized that there was a real need to bring quality information to patients, and that was the genesis for CYTHA. We had our first conference in 1998 up in Burlington, Massachusetts, a face-to-face meeting where people could all look at each other's necks and know that they finally were with people like themselves. And nobody was going to say, why do you have that scar on your neck? Because we all had it. And it's evolved from there to the point now we have more than 60 face-to-face support groups meeting around the country. We had six different regional workshops this spring all over the country, which have had attendance of more than 500 people. We'll have a conference in October in the Boston, Massachusetts area where we'll probably have in excess of 400-500 survivors join us, as well as 20-25 prominent physicians from around the United States. The doctors really recognize the importance of the need for thyroid cancer education, and so much of it has to do with what the ladies were all talking about earlier. This label, the good cancer, there's a need to help people deal with what happens as a result of having the good cancer, because so many people don't get treated don't get treated by thyroid cancer experts. They're treated by people whose knowledge is somewhat dated, and so there's the benefit that we can provide is an opportunity for people to share their experiences and to learn and to be able to go back to their doctors and say, hey, how come this other person is being treated differently than me? And we partnered with a lot of the thyroid cancer experts. We have a wonderful working relationship with the American Thyroid Association. We have helped over time with unrestricted grants to them to help fund guidelines for thyroid cancer management, both differentiated thyroid cancer, which would be papillary and follicular, and also most recently a medullary thyroid cancer guidelines. This is all with the mission of helping people get better quality of care and better quality of life.
So, Gary, you know, I want to respond to some of the questions that we're getting in the chat room because people are really engaged and interested. And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about preparing for radioactive iodine. And somebody was asking about the low iodine diet, what that's all about, and how do people handle and cope with that? And if you can talk a little bit, too, about the resources that your organization has to support that low iodine diet.
Sure. We actually have a low iodine diet cookbook, which has been reviewed by all 28 of our medical advisors. It's on our website as a PDF, so people can freely download it, or we will ship it to them if they can't print it on their own for a nominal charge. But the idea of the low iodine diet is that if you starve the thyroid or what's left, people need to understand that when you have thyroid cancer, we'll typically have a thyroidectomy, and you'll hear the term, it's a total thyroidectomy, but it really isn't. It's a near total thyroidectomy. A part of the gland is left behind, and the thyroid that's left behind and any thyroid cancer tissue will absorb iodine. That's been proven scientifically. So the treatment is to attach the radioactive isotope to iodine, and then it will be absorbed by the cancer. So the mechanism is to starve the body of iodine for a period of a couple of weeks before the radioactive iodine treatment. And then the disease or the gland that's left will more actively absorb the targeted therapy. And I wanted to get that term in because radioactive iodine really was the first targeted therapy treatment that was used to battle cancer and it's clearly been supplanted by so many much much more attractive drugs, if you will, in the last few years, and thankfully so.
So, you know, the diet is, it's a beast. It's a bear.
Oh, no, don't say that.
I mean, it's so much fun. I love it. But I think, you know, I think that one of the problems that people have is that we're so often used to eating food that comes from a package, you know, and it's just a different way of thinking for the time frame that you're on this diet. And, you know, one recommendation that I have is, look, people always are asking you what they can do to help. They were always asking me. I assume everybody else has that going on. People want to know what they can do to help, and we're often so polite and like, oh, don't worry about it. I don't need any help. I was like, yeah, you can bake some bread for me. You can bake some low-iodine food for me. Sure. And so, you know, getting together something like a group of folks on Lots of Helping Hands, if you guys can type that Lots of Helping Hands URL into the chat room, that would be great. It's a way that you can schedule your friends online to help you out with things and just set up a cooking list. You know, you want to find people who are really going to follow this diet to the letter and help you out with this. But I had a friend who baked bread for me and brought it to my house every 3 days, and other friends who made food. And, you know, it's a great way to let people who love you do something that's really useful for you.
What a great idea. Now, you really should tell them you're on this diet forever, and you'll never have to make another meal.
Exactly. Just keep it coming.
Why wreck a good thing?
Yeah, it's true. Well, I think
totally.
We so often think of this diet as so negative and horrible because, you know, it's effort that we're not used to preparing food for ourselves. But there are amazing recipes out there that, it's great food, and, you know, I think if we just don't look at it as the curse of no iodine, but just look at it as, you know, food that we're taking the time to meet, there's a ton of great recipes that are not specifically low iodine that have no iodine in them. So it's not necessarily freakish. You just have to sort of change your perspective in the way that you look at it.
I think it's more the curse of you can't do this, and we don't like to be told that, and it really bothers us.
And it's a change. It is a change in habits at a time that's really stressful.
It's an amazingly healthy diet, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you think about it, for all of you people who were on earlier, you probably felt healthier than you have, you know, before or since, while you were maintaining the diet. Now it's hard to admit that because then we have to ask why we don't continue it. And you're right. I love my packaged foods and fish and on and on. And you can't do that. Yes.
Gary, I have a burning question for you. This is Leah. This has been the source of great debate just within the folks with thyroid cancer right here and just here within my group in Rochester. Which is better, going hypo before your scans or thyrogen? It's been a huge debate.
Well, for the longest time, clearly was hypo, but somebody mentioned Sloan Kettering. A lot of their research has been about really validating staying on your medication being treated with thyrogen treatment. And for people who don't know, the thyrogen, in effect, simulates in your body the effect of going hypothyroid, meaning in the olden days we used to have to stop taking our medication to be tested and then treated with radioactive iodine. But now with thyrogen, we don't have to stop our medication. We get a couple of injections after being rigorously on the diet. We get a couple of injections in, as they say, a large muscle, and you can interpret that how you want. And then you can be tested, and in the course of a couple of days, you feel just as good as you ever did. Some people never miss a beat. But it's clearly a very different experience for the person than going hypothyroid. So which is better? Well, as they say, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. But the literature is getting much, much closer. And the rationale or the urgency of going hypothyroid is definitely diminishing unless you've got that physician who's really 10 years behind the curve. But I can tell you, I was always treated hypothyroid, And I have a certain jealousy for all you people who never had to go that route.
I'm realizing that we're running out of time, and I just really want to make sure that we get to this one question that we had from Wendy in the chat room, and she asked whether or not other kinds of cancer can metastasize to the thyroid. Is that something that you have information on, Gary?
Wow. I have never heard of that one. I've not heard that question posed, actually. Sorry. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to add
that. Me up.
I'm going to add that to my list of research to-dos this week so that, we can come back next week with an answer to that question.
I will worry about that as well.
One thing I did want to do is Alicia sent me this really awesome PSA that Rod Stewart did, and I think it's so awesome. I want to play it. You guys cool with that?
Oh, yeah.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, love Rod Stewart.
All right, this is the Rod Stewart PSA for Light of Life.
Most people know me for my voice or my songs or my hair, but most people don't know that I was diagnosed with cancer, and it wasn't the type of cancer you'd normally associate with a rock star lifestyle. It wasn't lung cancer, it wasn't liver cancer, it wasn't skin cancer. It was thyroid cancer, a cancer that today is the fastest growing fatal cancer in men and the fastest growing cancer overall among women, a cancer that can strike anyone at any time. And as a singer, a cancer that is especially scary. It can seriously affect the vocal cords. But luckily, early detection saved my voice and my life. Ask your doctor to check your neck for thyroid cancer, whether you sing in Madison Square Garden or just in the shower. If you want to learn more about thyroid cancer, visit the Light of Life Foundation at checkyourneck.com. This is Rod Stewart. Thank you.
That was cool.
Good PSA.
Excellent. Checkyourneck.com. And also look for their ads that are, they have these gorgeous glossy ads in magazines now, and they're doing a fantastic job. So as we wrap up, Gary, anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would say for those people who have already been diagnosed with thyroid cancer, the most important thing they can do is maintain a regimen of lifetime monitoring of their disease, because as you said, it comes back with unfortunately great frequency. Everyone else on the show admitted to having a recurrence, so I will as well. The best defense we have against recurrence is lifetime monitoring. Please do it. And for those of you who haven't had a diagnosis of thyroid cancer, please get a neck check.
Absolutely. And, it's the easiest
thing to get done by a medical professional.
Yeah. And it's something that I know so many other young adult cancer patients are concerned about as a potential side effect from their radiation treatment that they've had for other kinds of cancer. So, yeah, it's something that's on a lot of people's minds. So thank you so much, Gary, for joining us.
Thank you
tonight.
All.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Seriously,
thanks,
bro.
Gary.
Great show.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
Lisa, and Amy. Yeah.
Wow, he did better than I did.
I wrote him down.
Okay, all right, fine. Fine.
I have to start doing that.
Well, I mean, we ran over, and it's worth every minute. It was
totally. It was a great show.
Really great show. I'd like to thank the chat room. You guys were awesome.
A lot of new people in the chat.
Like, please. Come back, first-time listeners or long-time callers or whatever, how that math works. But
lots of Rochester in the house.
Rochester in the house.
We love Rochester.
And anyone from Rochester that is coming to the Syracuse conference, I will look forward to meeting you there. Carol, any last words? Because you've been so ominous tonight.
Any last words? I'm still kind of afraid to open my mouth when I'm speaking directly to you and Jack at the moment.
Oh, don't be shy, Pookie.
Oh.
I'll go nice.
My last words are that this is really a great show. Not just for the education that we've given other people, it was a really nice opportunity for me because I so often write and talk and blog and publish and radio speak about young adult cancer in general, and very infrequently do I actually speak about my own cancer and my own struggle with thyroid cancer. So it's kind of nice to remember that I'm actually a thyroid cancer patient and to, be part of this great conversation.
I forgot to play this before for Lily. I know she checked out, but... this will be just real quick.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
I, in turn, did not forget Lily's birthday and wished her a happy birthday when she came on the show.
That is true. That is true. Well, if that's the case, then I think we're good to go. Thank you guys for once again being my team here on the Stupid Cancer Show. Jack Bufard, Karen Rosenthal in our studio audience here, Annabelle Holland, my wife Jessica Feldman, Rachel, I forgot your last name, Rachel.
Rachel Mall.
Rachel Mall here on the Stupid Cancer Show live Chemodeck audience. And I guess now it's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
Spinderella cut it up one time.
In lieu of the love boat, I felt this was a more appropriate
love
song. Because, first of all, I'd like to thank our guests, Lily Mulcahy, Alicia Fox, Amy White, Gary Bloom, Leah Shearer, Carol Rosenthal, Jack Bufard. That's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did, and we did, poking a stick at stupid thyroid cancer. Next week is our show about sex, and more sex. Is it Monday? Our survivor spotlight is Jason Zimmerman, neuroblastoma survivor and thyroid cancer survivor from San Francisco. But our trio, our trifecta trinity of sexperts, Sue Ann Mark, PhD, clinical sexologist in private practice and breast cancer survivor, young adult. Sage Bolte, a breast cancer program sex counselor at the Inova Fairfax Medical Center in Virginia. Julie Larson, program director of Young Adult Programs at Cancer Care. It is going to be a phenomenal show. So remember, same bat time, same bat channel, folks. If you missed any of our previous shows, just check out the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast at itunes.ituy.com. Remember, folks, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. We'll see you all back here next week, live from the Chemo Deck once again. Jack Bufard, Carol Rosenthal, our live studio audience, Captain Stubing and I, even though it's not the love boat, Salt and
Cinderella,
Salt and Pepper, and I wish you a great evening. Go to bed, Leah.
Fuck her out.
She never had.